Anything said in this podcast is our opinion, and while our aim is to explore the weird and wonderful world of humans in a non-judgmental way, we apologise if we don't always achieve this perfectly. It goes without saying that this podcast is for entertainment purposes and should not be taken as medical fact or in lieu of professional advice. Enjoy the show. Hello, I'm Emma.
And I'm Danny.
And welcome to our podcast, What's Not Wrong With Us?
Well, we share our interest in the human experience from people who don't smell their own farts to people who say, I told you so. And everything in between, but most importantly, what's not wrong with us?
Are there times when you feel out on your own, afraid that you're the only one? Something strange, something unique. Is it you?
Is it me?
Well, we're here to tell you what's not wrong with you. What's not wrong with us?
So we've had the farts before, except in a slightly different vein. People mm-hmm. who don't like the smell of their own farts, mm-hmm. people who don't smell their own farts.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this one was more targeted as the people who do not admit, the non-admitters. You know, it's part of your human body. It's what happens. It's part of your lived experience. To not own it, though. Mm-mm.
I know.
Mm-mm. Very wrong.
I think they do.
And then to also shirk blame onto others, especially if you have some sort of gastroenteritis situation. No.
Did I ever tell you about the time? So I don't really fart very often, and I think a lot of vegetarians...
Because you're a lady.
No, not just that, but I think vegetarians don't... It's like people think vegetarians, oh, you eat all those lentils and beans and then you fart. Actually, I think it's the opposite. I think it's the meat that makes people fart more. Anyway, I don't fart very often, but one time I was having some digestive distress and I farted in the children's room and made them cry. It's so bad, Mom. It's so bad. And that, I mean, that might have been 8 years ago, but it's still
it
brought
stays
up.
With them.
Still
yes.
brought up. I mean, I'm bringing it up now, like mm-hmm. so.
It will never
it's
die.
Not just them. So how are you, Danny?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's been a while since we've recorded now. Life has happened. Listeners will know that we took a little break.
How long of a break did we take?
It was about 2-3 weeks.
Was it only that?
Mm-hmm.
A lot has happened.
A lot of life has happened in between times. Summer got crazy. Summer became very stressful, very busy. And yeah, it was just really hard. I think it was relatively easy to find time. It was harder to find headspace.
Oh yeah, definitely.
The time wasn't an issue. It was finding the headspace to be like uppy and talky and let's have chitty chat and da 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 da.
Totally.
When all you want to do is cry or stress or drink wine or all of the above.
Mm-hmm. Yes, which I have done a few times recently.
Mm-hmm. It has been really weirdly stressful. It's been a stressful couple of weeks. There's been lots of very stressy things have happened with work and life and home things and just in general. And then, as I say, yeah, just trying to find the headspace to do this. And the thing is, I enjoy doing this.
Yeah.
It triggers that, like, you know, without sounding really annoying, that really kind of performeriness in me, because it's like that you are doing a thing and you are having your moment and you are speaking into the microphone and you are living that truth. But it can't be summoned from nothing. You have to have a reserve there to be able to talk like this and do.
Definitely. You have to have some sort of space. And, you know, there's people who are like professional podcasters and they can do one or two episodes a week, but they don't have a full-time job and all the other things that we have going on. And I am going to just say something now. Oh. I don't really like working full-time. I know that I have had the luxury of mostly not working full time. Most of my life, I've not worked full time. And because I've had like a part time job and I've been studying, or I've had a part time job because I've got the kids have both been young. And I've loved that, to have that balance. This is the first time that I've worked 9 to 5, 5 days a week. And it's really annoying. So little time to get things done. I really do feel like my life is work now when I work full time. And everybody listening is going to be going, oh, it's survival, having to work full time. I realize that other people have been doing that a lot longer than me, but it's just I was never used to it. And now I'm like, what the fuck, guys? Is this what we're going to do forever?
But it's one of those things of like different structure for different folks. I suppose if you find your job to be like vocationally kind of empowering and fulfilling and everything else, then work isn't work. It's just whatever else. I think it's just whenever you're having that and life and everything else, it can be hard to be constantly bringing that level of kind of like uppy energy.
Yeah.
You know? If it's not for you, then it's not for you.
I know. I think I would, I do love my job, mm-hmm. but I want more breaks from it. Mm. I want more flexibility as to when I can do it. And for example, sometimes on a Monday, I work better from home than I do from the office because I'm more used to it, I think, or I don't know why exactly. On Monday, I have to go in and it's the first day of the week. And sometimes I get so little done. So I'm like just in this really non-productive space. It's very frustrating. I get really, really tired. You know, the way you do when you're not like doing things that are, mm-hmm. you know, stimulating you. And it's horrific. And if I had the choice, I would stay at home and I might not work in the morning to try and be more productive in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that the pandemic, and I think it has for a lot of people, but I think that the pandemic and home working taught a lot of people that actually if you let people work at their own pace, have more flexibility and do things in a different way, they will do the work. They might not work on a Monday morning. They might go and have a facial on a Monday morning instead, because that might be the way that they can be more productive.
Mm-hmm.
And it pisses me off that still at my age and after working this hard, that I've got to a place where somebody is like, you know, watching me and checking, am I doing stuff all the time?
Well, did you hear that thing in the news the other day about how a lot of those big tech companies in Silicon Valley are all forcing their staff to come back into the office 5 days? Because that apparently some sort of study or something was done and they found that productivity was down for home workers. And they're forcing people back into the offices and stuff. I don't know. I think there'll be a part of it where staff are coming into posts now and sort of expecting some sort of flexibility with regards to their work and it to be part of the contract, not an optional extra.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I do have hybrid working, but that's it. The hybrid working is you pick days that you'll be at home. You have to stick to those ones and you can't swap them about if a week that it suits you or whatever, which is kind of like, okay, well, I guess I'll take that. If that's the offer on the table, I guess I'll take it. But, you know, for me, I had an extremely productive day in work today because I was at home and I finished a couple of things that I needed to finish that I couldn't do in work yesterday. I just couldn't do them. It's not my, I'm not productive there. Anyway.
This is the reality, guys. This is our lives.
Yeah.
We have up days, we have down days, we have non-productive days, we have productive days. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with us because we're muddling our way through the best we can.
And do you know what else? I don't deserve to complain, but we went to France. Mm. In the time that we've been off, we went to France for a week on a little mini tour with the band.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a brilliant time and we had several very good gigs. And when we came back, we had a massive anticlimax, as you might imagine. Hi, Sam.
Hi.
Do you have anything to say to the people at home?
Pleu.
Don't say pleu. Nobody knows what that means.
It's just quarter of the day.
Yeah.
You can't save a damsel that's not in distress.
Okay. Well, I'm a feminist, but anyway, we had a massive anticlimax of coming back. And, you know, that is
so... The post-leave blues.
Yeah, the post-holiday blues, but also the post being a full-time musician blues, because we were away and we were like, oh, the gig tonight, what time sound check? Oh, we have to drive an hour and a half to get to the gig, right? And then we came back and we're like, oh, are you at work tomorrow? Yeah. And, you know, the people that we work with were like, oh, how did the gigs go? And we were like, they were incredible. The audiences there are amazing. They were so appreciative. They really said we were so great. And they're like, that's good. When's that report going to be ready? You know what I mean? So you're like, yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, back to this.
Back to reality. And also another thing that I have signed up for as a distraction from my day-to-day working life is a book club called Lit the Tit.
Love that.
So it's all female-identifying people, I presume, because it's like, you know, and it's, I thought it was going to be maybe a wee bit chick-litty, but this, I really do think that this girl is my kind of person because she holds it at a bar. There's a themed cocktail time. But also the books are really interesting. So the one this time is Ariadne, which is a retelling of Ariadne is a figure in Greek mythology. She's the sister of the Minotaur.
Okay.
And she helps Theseus get through the labyrinth. Because she knows the labyrinth and she knows the Minotaur. Character I never knew before. Of course, Marty knew exactly who she was.
Of course.
But that's, you know, like it wasn't a Colleen Hoover novel, do you know what I mean? So,
not is anything wrong with Colleen Hoover's, yes.
Hoover,
Colleen
right, Hoover. Yeah.
You know, Daniel Steele and Co need airtime.
So, yeah, anyway, those are all fun things. Do you know why I thought this was a good little bit of side talk?
Trivia.
Because do you know what we normally do in the first bit of the podcast? We talk about mainly what the weather's been like.
Do we actually?
Yes. We always do that. Like,
I mean, we are Irish.
It's really hot at the minute, guys. It's really cold.
The weather.
I know, it's fine. I actually love a bit of weather talk myself.
I love a bit of weather talk. It's a great unifier. I had noticed it. It's a great unifier.
I had noticed that that was a thing that we did, so I just thought I'd mention it.
Maybe we'll make it a third segment.
We are more interesting than just weather talk, guys.
We are. There's a lot to us. We are onions with many layers.
Yes. And we're going to illustrate it now by talking about something.
This is Emma's topic week. How exciting.
It's my topic week, which I have to say, I think it is. I enjoy it less than your topic weeks.
Why?
Well, I think you bring better topics and...
She's so disparaging, folks. So disparaging. She brought us Dr. Google the last time.
Dr. Google was a good one, to be fair. Mm. And I just love talking with Dr. Google. Okay, so the other thing is that I find it very hard to come up with things that I don't have a direct experience of. And this is going to be another one where I out myself as a bit of a nightmare of a person. No.
I would like to point out that this lady is married. She has two kids. She has managed somehow, regardless of nightmare status otherwise.
Well, I used to be a lot more of a nightmare, to be fair. And this, the story that I'm going to tell will illustrate it. So the thing that I want to bring is telling random white lies to strangers you meet on, like, maybe trains, planes, buses, bars, right? Silently laughing, Donny. You can openly laugh.
I just enjoy it. The fabrication of your existence.
Yeah. So right. I really don't think I do this anymore. Although I would totally do it to get out of like a boring situation or like if I thought the person was in any way.
We absolutely need a story time of when this has happened.
So story time. This is a person. When I was about between the ages of 14 and 16 maybe. God, I must have been about 14 when this happened. So I used to go to France every year and I would au pair for my brother and sister-in-law. Or I would work in my sister-in-law's parents' hotel. So I was in France this 1 year. It was a great year. I think I was about 14. I think I found a picture recently. Golden tan, blonde hair, chain smoking.
Of course.
And met a bunch of English guys, surfer guys, all with blonde hair, really tanned. They thought I was a bit older. Sorry, I lied.
Is this a Jacqueline Wilson book? Like, what on earth? She's 14. She's tanned. She's chain smoking. Well, maybe not the chain smoking, but like, and then I met them and they were coming out of the water, strolling up the street towards me.
Yeah. So anyway, I said I was 16 because I knew they wouldn't hang about with me if I was 14. At one point, though, unfortunately, my brother was just talking about us and the age difference between us and stuff, and they worked it out. They were like, oh, hold on, we can do maths. She's not 16, she's 14. Anyway, that's not the lie. That's not the little white lie. But I did automatically lie to those boys because I was like, they won't hang about with me if I'm 14. Mm-hmm. So on the plane on the way back, so I was flying probably Dublin-Nantes. I was wearing I remember I was wearing like a boob tube as a skirt. So it's a very short skirt and everything. So anyway, I got on the plane and for some reason, I must have been hearing a lot of people talking in Southern Irish accents when I got on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
So for some reason, I decided to affect a brogue. So for some reason, I decided to say, does anyone know if our seats are assigned? Where are we sitting anyway? Are we sitting in assigned seats? Or God, I can't even, I've not got, have I got a signed seat on my ticket? I literally said one sentence.
Incredible. I'm
going over the top about it, but I said one sentence in like a Dublinish accent, right? And I had family in Dublin, so we would have spent some time there. I probably did a better accent than I do now, given that I never affect a brogue these days.
Yes.
And so unfortunately, the girl walking directly in front of me was from the south and was sitting in the seat beside me. So she said, oh no, I think we can sit where we want or whatever. And so she sat down and I'm going to do an Irish accent the whole time now. A Southern Irish accent, I should say. And I sat down and said, oh, what's your name? What's your name? What's your name? And all like this. And start. So I had then had to talk the whole time in an Irish accent.
Which I'm sure you did wonderfully.
So I did. Not that well. I think there was times where she could tell it dropped off a little bit or whatever. Also, there's some words that I think we use in the north that you don't necessarily use in the south, like BAP, for example. Yeah. So we had food on this flight, which you don't always get anymore. And I was like, oh, that's get butter on my BAP or something. And she was like, a BAP? BAP? What do you mean a BAP? Yeah. So I basically made up this story whereby my parents had split up and my dad lived down south and I lived down south, but sometimes I lived in Belfast. So she said, oh yeah, your accent's not very strong. And I was like, oh yeah, well, that's probably why. And I tried not to talk too much, you know, because I was like reading my book or whatever I was doing to avoid continuing on with this ridiculous lie that I got myself into. So that's my best example of that. Have you got any examples of that? Oh, no, sorry. The end of the story is, so we got off the plane and she was like, all right, okay, nice to see you. And of course, my Dublin family had come to pick me up from the airport. Yeah. So they all had Dublin accents. And she was like, well, maybe she wasn't lying. Yeah. I was like, this really supports my lie from this person I'll literally never see again. Why do I care about that? I don't know.
I mean, I like to think of it less like lying and more just like gentle fabrications, you know? Like, is anyone hurt? Is anyone worse off because of it? No. Was it fun? Yes. Then fucking go for it.
Well, it made a good story. I don't know that it was actually fun at the time. It was just one of those stupid things that I did in the spur of the moment and then had to commit to for a 3-hour flight.
It was a bit.
It was a bit.
The first thing that comes to mind in this vein is a story from when myself and my two sisters were children. I'm going to say primary school, going into secondary school age. And we had this thing. Now, bear in mind, we were three kids living out in the country on a farm. So we tended to hang out with ourselves as a little three.
Yeah.
I think I've told you before about trying to set the sheep free with the power of three will set us free. And we made a circle around it and then the sheep escaped. We believe we had magical powers. I digress. This particular story is around a concept that we termed le pretend, which is let's pretend, but like said so fast and so quickly that it kind of homogenizes into one thing.
Oh, I love
like
that.
Le pretend. So you would say le pretend and then you would just announce whatever the thing is that you're going to do.
Yeah.
So we were down one day playing around, just fucking, I don't know, mooching around fields and playing in rivers and whatnot. And across the river from us, there was these three other kids. And the three of us, incredibly, using some sort of weird sibling telepathy, all decided that we were going to collectively lie about what was coming out of our mouths next. So there was a quiet kind of understanding of le pretend. And then just narratives emerged. So Harriet donned her alter ego. That was Christy Hill. Annabeth donned her alter ego, Amanda Darcy. I didn't have a name they used to call me a hunga bunga for a little while, and then I would be like the terrorist or the person who was going to antagonize whatever was happening to them. Uh-huh. But the two of them would have adventures, they'd be solving mysteries and whatever.
Right.
Twin things. Anyway, so the three kids across the river from us, they're coming down and they're like, oh my God, other children. And we go over, Annabeth dons an accent, Harriet dons an accent, I am French.
I choose French.
I am just like Ken and Barbie, I am French. So I am just legitimately French, saying the five or six French words that I know at that time. God. So oui bonjour, baguette, pain au chocolat, baguette. And round and round and round. And then just more heavy Frenchiness.
Yeah, like
but I'm like giving it stacks. I am serving French. And they are just like, and who are you? And then the story's just like, I was a foreign exchange child. They had found me. We're taking them to show them where water is coming from this river. And they're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And this went on for about an hour, I think. It was a long exchange. Lots of conversation back and forth, trying to understand who we were as tribes of people meeting at this riverfront. You know, not understanding that we had parents in houses nearby. No. We were clansmen. Finding each other across the divide. They had a whole back narrative about who they were and what they were doing. And we sold this, like I say, for about an hour until we came back up to the house. And we were like, that was a lot. That was a really long, long narrative that we just continued and perpetuated. And we still talk about it to this day, about those kids. Yeah. And also I think more the having the collective, we're doing this. Yeah, we're doing this. This is happening. And go.
Yeah, see. I love that. I especially love it because it was more than one person. But also, you know, so you guys were kids. We did a lot of pretend games. I love that. Le pretend. We did a lot of pretend games when I was a kid. The famous line in our house, my dad was really obsessed with our pretend games because you could hear it going on down the garden. And he was always fascinated with what we were doing. And the famous line that he always quoted was me going, pretend I was dead and no one noticed.
Because Emma needs the most dramatic thing of the person's life.
Pretend I was dead and nobody noticed. Because I just told them all what to do all the time. Yeah. I was the director and the
which
lead.
Which is interesting because you were the baby as well.
Well, no, this wasn't siblings. This was friends. My siblings were far too old to play with me.
How are you?
No. They were just the garden. I wasn't. No. But you know, because I was only about, I might have been younger than. No, I was definitely 14. But you know, 14 is young, and I did dabble with mistruths when I was a teenager.
And
I think, you do, because you experiment with what is, you know, what can I get away with, what's believable, what's not believable. And, you know, hopefully we all, and in fact, you know, I got burnt a fair bit by doing it. Same. So it teaches you a lesson. Mm-hmm. What you don't realize, I think, when you're a teenager, which you should hopefully, if you develop a normal personality, realize when you're an adult, is that people can tell when you're lying.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I can tell when people are lying.
It's a hard truth. It's a hard truth because I think when you're in the lie, you feel so unbelievably assured of yourself.
Yeah.
Like you have told the most convincing whatever. But, and it's weird, telling that someone's lying is like a sixth sense. Like it's not an obvious thing sometimes. It's just like a change in frequency or like a change in, I don't know, it's like pheromones or something. It's weird. I couldn't put my finger on it and say what it is that makes me know it.
Yes.
You just know it. You know it in yourself.
I know exactly what you mean. And, you know, I think I have a better sense than most, maybe. Mm. But I do think that everybody can tell when other people are lying. And sometimes it just is like a discomfort where you feel like something about that didn't sit right. But I'm not like going to challenge them on it because it ultimately doesn't matter. But, you know, when it happens enough times, you sort of think, I wonder why that person feels like they need to lie about stuff. Do you know what I mean?
I agree. I have that thought. But then as someone who likes to think as a recovered liar, it was a thing of like the empathy you have for them about the why are they lying. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time whenever I was younger and you would tell these lies, it would be things like, I don't know. So, for example, I'm just thinking here. I remember coming back after summer. I must have been about 14, 15. I got onto the bus and met two girls that I was friendly with. We were going down and I was talking about how I'd gone some sort of summer camp or something. and which I think was true, but that there are these two boys there. And I had showed them pictures of these two girls and they really liked them.
Mm.
And I hope you can see how this really grew legs very, very quickly.
Yeah.
Which turned around and into one of the girls wanted the boy's phone number to begin a conversation. And Danny thought, oh, I'll give them my mum's number.
Oh, God.
And then she left a very kind of semi-sexual, but too young to really understand the mechanics of what the sexual was, onto my mum's voicemail. And I honestly thought the world was going to end whenever I got home. Wow, and mum played it back in front of my dad and was like, what the fuck is this?
Oh my God.
And you're just like, but it came from a place of being insecure.
Of course.
It came from a place of feeling like I had to be outlandish and say these outlandish things to feel like I had worth in the space that I was in.
And I had a very similar thing. And I think that there are other ways then in which that it can come from. So it can come from insecurity, feeling not enough. So you have to lie to be more than enough. And then it can come from like a lack of wanting to be challenged.
Mm.
So you, instead of saying the truth, which is, I don't want to do that thing, or, you know, oh yes, no, I didn't sort that problem out, you lie because you don't want to be challenged about it. I suppose it's just when you're in a post-lying frame of mind, you know, you feel like, I wish that person realized that, first of all, I can tell that they're lying, so it makes me think a little bit less of them. But I do have that empathy that, as you're saying, but also that they don't have to do it.
Yeah.
And it feels so much better not to do it.
So I think it's important here to differentiate between the lying that we're talking about, which is
harmless. I know,
harmless.
We've gone off a wee bit.
No, but it is a fair point to say, because I don't think it's water we've touched on before, is there is the lying that we're talking about, which is more in the realm of fibs. It's a fib lie. And I don't think you can be too black and white about this. All lying is not bad. There's fibs and white lies and this kind of gentle fabrication that we're talking about, which is what this conversation is about. The other half of that coin is full-blown pathological liars.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other kettle of fish. And that is fundamentally wrong, because the intention and the push behind that is some sort of negativeness towards the person being lied to.
Well, pathological liars can't help lying.
Yes.
That's the definition of that. But there's other... Oh, this shit. It's not a psychological podcast. I was about to get into...
But
like,
you stopped
borderline.
Yourself.
I did.
That's growth. That's growth.
Okay, thank
so,
you.
So to circle back to what we are talking about, I think the first thing I would say is that there's a bit of empathy required. Also, did we just manifest a jingle out of nowhere? The merch will print itself. But yes, so there is... I've totally lost my train of thought now, what we're talking
Hold
about.
Hold on, let me stir my chutney.
Say you're middle-aged, like saying you're middle-aged, I'll take £100.
Okay, so I'm sorry about that. And also, I wasn't bringing a thing about lying as such. You know, I was talking about that specific thing where you tell a white lie to a stranger on a train, like, you know, I'm trying to think of another example that isn't one that I've done, like...
Or, I mean, that more colloquial sort of thing where you're retelling a story and you amplify the story a little bit better for storytelling purposes.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a bit of crack. And you do it for the benefit of the storytelling and how enjoyable it is. In the same way, there's been a couple of times where, you know, say you've had a mad night out, you amplify the quantity or quality or whatever the madness was to benefit the storytelling.
Or more likely, I probably downplay it, like, you know. Oh no, it was fine. It was only one bottle of wine and I was very reasonable. Didn't embarrass myself at all.
But yeah, I think it's just, but I don't know. I worry there's a wee bit of like a harshness towards fibbery in general because it seemed to be, you know, sowing seeds of distrust, or you are trying to make a fool out of someone by sewing. You're not. It's just a wee bit of crack and a wee bit of gentleness and a wee bit of, because again, the intention behind it is just the levity. It's not to, you know,
it's
hurt.
It's not to deceive or hurt.
No.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, is that we've got lots of ways of communicating as humans, and some of them are more entertaining than others. And it could be, you know, if I was to say to you, because I was a recovered liar for a while, and so I really didn't lie, like do any of the white lies or anything, whatever, because I was detoxing essentially from lying. Because when I was a teenager, I did tell a lot of lies. I lied to my parents all the time. You know, I did made up stories to friends, all sorts of stuff like that. So when you're coming down off that and you're maturing and you're deciding, oh, I actually want to be an honest person and I'm a congruent person. And this is why I would say whatever your teenager is doing, do not stress yourself. Their personalities are not fully formed. They're not fully mature. Give them a chance to guide them well, as well as you can, and give them a chance and give them the benefit of the doubt until they're up. And they can decide, actually, this is the kind of person that I want to be. And this is the kind of person I am naturally. When you're a teenager, you are a fucking hallion. Like a literal, I was total hallion.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hallion doesn't translate in all countries.
It's maybe one for Urban Dictionary. I'd be interested to know what... Yeah, hallion.
Well, what I mean by that is, yeah, like a hot mess mixed with... you know,
a bit of chaos, a
hyper dog.
Yeah.
A hot mess and a hyper dog thrown into a bag together. And, you know, that's what your brain is like when you're a teenager. So you can't expect them to be perfect all the time. So anyway, I would have been like, you know, definitely no lies, you know, no, not even white lies, not even a joke, not even a, yes, you do look good in that dress, nothing, right? Which makes brutality. You, well, exactly.
Yeah.
It makes you impossible to be around and it's not a realistic way to be. So as you say, the little white lie, the lie on the bus about, oh, yes, I went to Spain too before and it was lovely or whatever it may be, is just conversational lubricant.
I think it's necessary sometimes. It's necessary because otherwise life would be very stale, and the living in the absolute is living in the black and white. And as we've said multiple times on this podcast, life is many shades of grey. And unfortunately it doesn't work that way. So as much as you want this, as you say, congruence in all its absolution, it's just not real. It doesn't serve you.
And I think you can be congruent and still do those kind of little fibs that we're talking about, because they don't detract from who you are or what your true intentions are.
Well, I was going to say intention is key here. Intention is the fulcrum by which this spins. And
fulcrum.
Fulcrum. oh, God, you made me...
Sorry.
I was on a whole roll there of verbosity. Because the intention is the part that allows you to see, to hark back to that, what is the person... doing to you in the moment of telling whatever that thing is. Are they trying to hurt you? Are they not trying to hurt you? Is it just for the crack of telling the story? Is it not? All that sort of stuff. I think that's the point where you make a decision around, do I challenge this? Do I not? Now, I do think the difficulty you have there when we were talking about it in terms of if someone's telling a fib or whatever, it does bring out a feeling of unease to hear a lie being told to you.
Yeah.
And it's difficult, I think, sometimes to... put that to bed in a way that doesn't also make you feel like you're not trusting your gut instincts. If I like, I don't like that. Yes. I don't know what that was, but I don't like that. It's hard to do both. It's hard to acknowledge what that is, but then also be like, this isn't hurting anyone. I'm going to let this go.
Yeah.
It's a thing you learn as you think as you get older.
Totally. Yeah. And as you're interacting with more younger people, I think as well, because that's where it tends to come from, youngness and immaturity. I have a thing with Sam where I've always been able to tell when he's lying. Now, to be honest, that wasn't a like magic power when he was younger. He's not a good liar, this child. but he continues to be really, really honest. And he's got a girlfriend now, and he's too honest with her. He's too open with her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think one of the things that's quite helpful as a you know, coping strategy whenever you're young, you're entering into relationships for the first time, is the shield of not having to tell the exact truth all the time. he just seems to be very, very open with her, and he's entirely himself. So I had said to him, I was just trying to suss out, what is he like? Because you know the way, for me anyway, I would be super awkward at the start of a new relationship and feel like I had to try to be cooler, cleverer, say the right thing. That was a big problem that I had when I was starting to go out with Marty, because he's so clever. I was like, I'm not clever or cool enough for this guy. Yeah. I don't know what, I'm going to say the wrong thing. It was very stressful. So I was trying to suss this out with Sam, and I said, are you able to be yourself with her, Sam? Mm-hmm. And he could not get his head around this concept. He couldn't understand who else he would be being. He couldn't understand, like, not being himself. And he was like, what? I mean, what? And I said, well, do you find you're trying to be cooler or funnier? And he's like, he said, you know, and I pressed him on this, you know, do you have to be, try to be funny, try to be silly, whatever? And he was like, no, it's not awkward at all. It's not awkward. It's just, the only thing I was worried about was, you know, whether to like hug her or shake her hand or whatever when I first met her. So, you know, like some people are just more free to be themselves, but I do think that that's unusual. And that if he had the protection of a little bit of being able to, you know, just fabricate, elaborate, you know, dress it up a little bit.
Yeah.
A tiny bit, because sometimes that can be really annoying as well when kids teenagers and
sweet balance.
Yeah. They don't know when to stop is the problem.
Because it's a drug.
Yeah.
So to be whatever version of yourself you choose to be in that moment is a drug. And to feel like you can be any variation of yourself, depending on whatever comes out your mouth, it's incredible. Because imagine the control you have. You get to be whatever you decide you are. And you can have whatever past you want, and you can have whatever skills you want, and you can have whatever talent you think or personality or anything else.
Yes. Well, I mean, that if this was a psychological podcast, that again would be getting into the realm of when it is, you know, something more diagnosable. Like, what? Why would you be needing to fabricate your whole life? Why do you need to lie to have people's attention in a certain way, or sympathy, or whatever it may be? Do you know what I mean?
However,
it's not.
This is not a psychological podcast. We're workshopping it. We'll get there.
Okay. So I don't know. Do you think, as we're done with that, we're done?
Oh no, the Emma Cleaver has come down. She has reached her emotional end of that story. We are done now.
Do you know, part of it is that I'm looking at the time as well. So I get to a certain point in the time and I think, we can't have anything more to say about that. That's done.
It's just so abrupt. Like, no. She's just like, sorry. I've said everything. Now I'm done saying things. Done.
Well, anyway, I mean, anyway. The point of that was, I don't think I even really illustrated it as well as I wanted to, because I was hoping that you would have examples of like being on a bus and somebody saying, you know, this is my stop. Is this your stop? And you going, no, it's not my stop, and staying on the bus for three more stops something.
I do have those examples. I was putting that more down to like awkward nerves. See, I don't even register that as lying. I don't register that as social anxiety.
Yeah, and that's my coping mechanism. Or a protective thing. That could be to avoid a dodgy person or something.
To avoid a dodgy person, I have said all manner of things if I feel like I'm in an awkward conversation. And again, if someone's energy is weird.
Yeah.
But also I want to keep that, because that could be another podcast episode. It's on my list.
What does weird energy even mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, okay. So do you want to... Actually, maybe I should go for Next Door first, because Next Door is a sad shadow of its former self.
Oh, I thought your story was a sad story. No. So, Emma, I have to ask, yes. Is that cat okay?
Well, some of the cats are not okay, Danny, and that's...
I'd be fair, some of the cats around me are also not okay. There was a whole fucking spree of cats not being well. And then I found myself on the CC website.
Oh.
And was looking at cats up for adoption.
Uh-oh.
Just because, you know, those late hours, you just find yourself drifting on the internet. And there was this most fabulous ad for this cat called Lichen or something. Black cat sitting in classic cat loaf pose in the corner. And it said, Lichen has many wonderful qualities. He's quiet. He is always happy to be there, but he is also... the void. And then it went on for 20
he's so
minutes.
Black.
He's 20 minutes talking about all his personality, and it sucks you in because he is the void.
Oh.
And he just exists. And it was fabulous. Whoever had written that for them, honestly, like, I hope that cat gets adopted off the back of it, because it was fabulous.
So we had just, I just, because we're talking about cats and them being okay or not okay, when we were in France, so my brother and sister-in-law have four cats. One of them is very specifically Lucy's cat, my niece's cat, and he is the best cat in the world. And I fight me that he is the best cat in the world. He's called Captain. He is a quite a petite, very fluff, like long-haired black cat who knows how gorgeous he is.
Called it Titan, and he's tiny.
No, he's called Captain.
Oh, I thought you said Titan. I was like, oh, right, okay, very good.
Well, he's called Captain, and I'm going to buy him a small little captain's hat to put on his little beautiful head. And he knows how gorgeous he is, right? He's got beautiful, perfect little paws, beautiful little face. He has a very fang. He's really fangy. And he's really friendly, really nice, but very chill. And he particularly likes getting into small boxes. So there's this tiny little cardboard box sitting on the chair, which he got into. And I was able to carry him into the other room in this little tiny cardboard box. And I did take pictures, except because he's the void, you couldn't really see. It was just like blackness in a cardboard box.
It's fabulous. Yeah.
And one of the cats there is very old, and her back legs don't really work anymore, so she like has to make a very loud noise scrabbling up the radiator to reach the food. And she's a strange character. But anyway, so those cats are both okay and not okay, you know, various degrees. I just wanted to shout out Captain, really, because I miss him. I knew I would miss him so much. So we had a weird thing on next door where some people posted a picture of a lot of dead fish. So it was near the Dirty Duck in Hollywood, if you know up that direction of the coast. Don't normally walk this way. Maybe it's just a case that they didn't get across the stream when the tide went out. I'm not sure if fish are crossing streams. It's not like...
Okay.
I'm not sure they're using streams as bridges or anything, no. But...
Oh, who are we to know?
I don't really know about much about fish life. But she posted these pictures, and right enough, it's thousands of them, right? Goodness. So I knew that the comments would be somebody being like, don't worry, whatever. So I came to the comments for that, and I got it. This is most likely a natural occurrence at this time of year. Mackerel hunt these wee fish, and they end up on shore en masse. So I was like, that's great. What sort of fish are they? They look like white bait fish. Great. I don't need to worry at all about this. Now I can go on with my day. But some other people did not feel that about the pictures of thousands of tiny fish on the banks. So somebody came on to comment, have you reported this to anyone? To which the original poster said, who do I report it to? So I would ask our listeners, would you know where to go or who to phone if you stumbled across a lot of dead fish at the side of the stream? Who are you going to call? And I have not got a clue who I would call.
I would only from a farmy point of view, I would say it's probably the DEA, the Department of Environment and Agriculture, because I'm sure they have something to do with water or beaches or mass death. Because the thing is, if a whale dies on the beach, it's the DEA is the ones who are trying to get the thing removed.
All right, okay. Well, that's good to know. City Farm girl
knowledge.
Here.
Farm knowledge prevails.
City girl here, not got a clue. Don't even know where I would go for a pigeon.
Well, I was
there's a person called Debbie Doolittle who usually takes in any animal that is on.
God bless her.
You know, in
I was
distress.
Thinking it was going to be the algae bloom.
The algae bloom.
My goodness. Our coastal comrades are beside themselves.
It's been horrible. It has been horrible.
So North Coasty people have had a terrible time of it between Castle Rock, Port Stewart, Port Rush. No dogs to be allowed them near the water.
Yeah.
Can't allow, if you're bringing stuff home from the beach, you have to be very careful you're not cross-contaminating things.
You couldn't even bathe it sometimes because it can make you very sick. Blue-green algae.
Called. Very, very dangerous. Yeah. Very, very sick. But also very annoying time of year for it to bloom in the way that it has because it's the time people want to be in the sea.
I know, yeah. Well, to be fair, I was in the sea in Portrush in July, and it was a week between some algae blooms. So they measure them, it comes up, oh, you can't bathe. It had all gone away by the time we went there for a week, and then actually it came back again after we left. But the sea was so Baltically freezing cold that if I had been told I couldn't have gone in it, I think it would have been okay. I would have survived. Me personally, my sister wouldn't have, but I would have personally. So anyway, this post.
Sorry, yes, the fish.
No, it's fine. Just, I thought that was so funny. Have you reported this to anyone? Where would I report it to? Now, that person also didn't reply.
Okay.
So she doesn't know herself. So then somebody else comes on and says, I think I need to give the same answer again as somebody else has given, because these people are clearly not getting it. As mentioned above, stranding of bait fish such as herring, sprat often occurs as predators. Fish and cetaceans, some sort of word, chase them into shallow water where the receding tide leaves them stranded. Okay, people say, that's great, thanks very much. And then they start talking about discharge of effluent and, you know, other environmental problems that might cause the problem.
Effluent is such a sanitized word for poo and pee.
And then so somebody says, yeah, you need to report it to DARA, as it will need cleaned up if there's thousands of the wee things. Some people then start to do, which is always the thing that happens on next door, poor wee things. I mean, they're basically like insects, but in the water. Like, they don't know. They didn't know anything about that happening. Don't worry too much about the fish.
Yeah.
It's a natural occurrence. It's just one of those things. We just don't see it that often. So the fish weren't okay. That was the point of that story.
Transcending felines.
Now, there was a cat that I just did want to mention. I hope this cat's okay.
Yeah.
But it was sent to me by a listener and family member, my sister Susie, who sent me this picture with the caption, "Is that cat okay?"
Oh, she is fully in. Fully in.
She said, this person said, "My cat," I'm not going to say the cat's name because I'm identifying cats left, right and centre, and I have to stop doing that.
We don't know if these cats are in the cat protection system or not.
Yeah. "My cat name here, is missing. It's all black with a fluffy tail. She has curly hair in her ears. And the picture, they have put a picture of the cat and put two yellow circles around the ears to indicate where the curly hair is located."
In case you were at all confused.
Because you can't see that the hair is curly.
Right.
But, so it's kind of like curly hair here.
Yes.
And here.
Only here and here. Only here and here.
In the ear area of this cat, not, you know.
Not all cats.
Oh, my God. So, and it was just saying, you know, keep a lookout in your garden and garage and blah, blah, blah. It might get locked in. And there's several pictures of it looking almost the same. And one picture where you can't see it very well. So it's not a terribly useful picture. It's like taken from a distance of it on top of a television.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe to illustrate that it can climb. But I hope that cat's okay. And actually, I'll maybe check up soon on that cat and see.
Do, link in.
Yeah. So that's really all there's been on next door. I have been away, so I haven't been keeping up to date as much as I should have, maybe. But that's all for next door right now.
I mean, we'll keep you appraised. Certainly, we'll try and keep on top of the fish situation.
Yeah.
And see how that situation develops.
Hopefully, just natural occurrence. No one needs to worry about it.
Or DARA. Let's not involve DARA unless we have to.
No.
So, normal on TikTok.
Yes.
Are you ready for this?
Tell me all
about
it.
I'm going to talk about something very dear to my heart.
Oh, God.
That I find very concerning on TikTok. I don't know if you know this, but we're going to talk about it. And the subject is bread.
Right, okay.
Specifically, Americans and bread.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, two things. First of all, did you know that American regular pan loaf is basically confectionery?
Yeah.
I did not know this.
They're really bad at bread.
Oh
Americans,
my goodness.
Yeah.
And not all bread, just the bread that you would buy from the supermarket bread. Like you can go and buy sourdough and you can go and get your bakery bread, which they would call like more fancy bread, is closer to what our bread is. But their standard in a loaf bread that they buy from the grocery store is like brioche-y,
sugary,
sweet, specifically the white stuff as well.
Yeah.
So I didn't know. I follow a girl on TikTok, which I promise I will actually try to link on the Instagram page. I have not done it in many, many episodes.
We'll try.
I keep forgetting and then it just goes out of my mind and it doesn't happen. So, hey Siri, set reminder to log Instagram, please. Thank you. We'll see if that remembers or not. Anyway, so that was the first thing. And all, I mean, it really concerned me from a number, because A, I love toast and bread and sandwiches and things. And I just thought like, what, I mean, you're not really experiencing bread then. It's kind of like a weird sort of sugary confection that you're having.
Yeah.
And I think particularly then for people from the UK who've gone over to America and had bread, and then they're like, what is happening?
Yeah, I think they don't have so much the pan loaf. We have such a range of pan loaves. You could have every variety of wholemeal, granary, seeded, every sort of thing. But maybe that's why they're more into bagels. And what's the other thing they would have? Like, what would they make a sandwich
bagels are, well, that bread, that white bread. Now, this story goes deeper because then I fell into bread TikTok. Did you know that in America, they do not put butter on sandwiches?
I have seen that in films, but I thought that was just, look, you do not know the can of worms you're opening right now with me and butter and sandwiches.
Right, because I genuinely, so much so that for the first time in my natural born life, I left a comment on a TikTok video because I was so stunned by what I was saying. It was an American girl who'd been on holiday in Europe and was telling them about this food trend. And I was like, what's this going to be? It was butter on sandwiches.
Oh, Danny, I...
On a baguette
you
loaf.
You shouldn't have done this when I don't have a drink. I can't be coping with this right now.
Listen to me. She was like, so I was in Paris and they do this weird thing where they were putting butter on bread. Pause for disbelief. Then she went on to say, and then they just put their stuff on top of that. So I, like a force from my soul, Emma, was drawn to the comment section. And of course, my European compatriots were like,
what are you talking about?
What's happening? Questions? How do you have sandwiches? So I said, if not butter, then how do sandwich bind?
Yes.
And they were like, mayonnaise.
I mean, but...
Mayonnaise. It isn't mayonnaise.
No. Oh,
and then
God.
I was like, but what about the quintessential PB&J? Surely not mayonnaise. Oh, in that case, condiment already sticky, therefore nothing required.
Yeah, but it's so dry. You need butter. Butter is essential. And when I say butter, I mean a spreadable butter substitute or butter, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't tend to put... Butter is a wee bit too rich of a flavour for me to be putting it on all my sandwiches. But one of the reasons why this annoys me so much, right? I felt triggered. For the first time in this podcast recording, I felt triggered. I really did. And the part of the reason for that is if Marty was here, right, we would have been looking very significantly at each other.
Yes.
Because when we first got together, we were making a sandwich beside each other and he looked over at me and said, buttering both pieces of bread. Radical. Right? And I said, excuse me, what?
What are you doing?
And he said, oh, I only ever butter one of the pieces of bread in a sandwich. And I was like,
why is he rattling the butter?
Explain me the logic of that, please.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? And he was like, oh, that's just how my family have always done sandwiches, right? And I was like, look, I launched into a full lecture. Okay.
Yeah.
What is the purpose of the butter and the...
if not to spread.
So the butter in the sandwich, it protects the bread from any wet fillings. It sticks other fillings to the bread. It's a binder. Your sandwich will just fall apart with loose pieces of bread if you don't have butter, right?
And also, listener, you missed a wonderful hand gesture of Emma's hand slipping and sliding ferociously past
two bits of bread, impossible to come together in a sandwich form,
like opposing magnets bouncing off each other.
And the thing is, so then he was like, oh no, that's just how we've always done it. And then he went and asked his parents. He was like, funny thing happened with Emma the other day, and they didn't know what he was talking about, right? So he had just missed, he had like zoned out when his mum was buttering the other piece of bread and had lost that part of them making a sandwich instruction. Which is so like him when you think about it, right?
He was like, I have enough information, on to the next.
So he just thought, oh, you butter one piece of bread, then you do all your fillings, and you, there you go, you've got a sandwich.
So to circle back to the butter on the bread, so I have a few things about this. Number one, my butter is always salted because it's my favourite thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Two, coming, circling back to toast, hot toast, butter.
With real butter.
And Nutella.
Oh, yeah.
Is God, fucking incredible.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Also, mum used to make these things, she'd call it midnight cheese, where you would be in the living room, the fire would be on, it'd be around Christmas time. She's like, do you want some midnight toast and cheese? And you're like, yes. She'd go down, bread, lashings of butter, thick cut cheddar cheese.
Yeah.
And the sandwiches cut into triangles.
Gorgeous.
And she'd bring up rounds and rounds and rounds of this stuff. Yeah. And we would just scoff with tea. And it was, the butter, it was just... So,
well, real butter is a delicious, delicious thing. And when you get really good real butter, it's incredible. The butter in France, or if you make your own butter, which is not that difficult to do.
Probably not.
That is like, it's a treat. It's a lovely thing. I don't eat it a lot because, just reasons. I mean, the patriarchy, I think, mainly. But anyway, well, that's a story for another day.
So anyway, all this to say, I was putting my thoughts and feelings into the comment section. Never am I a keyboard warrior, but I felt compelled, Emma, to discuss this because...
to do with butter and bread.
Incredible, and right?
I'm behind you.
Americans suggesting that mayonnaise was an adequate substitute, first of all.
No.
Lunacy.
Okay. Yeah,
too
that's
far.
Point two.
Too far.
That we need, no, let's break that down because it's not the same, Danny.
It is not the same. You cannot fundamentally have... Because what are you having with jam? Apparently, they're just having jam.
Yes. So that means that their PB&J sandwiches are really dry.
Oh, my God.
Because
so
peanut butter is quite difficult to eat. Mm-hmm.
It needs the lubrication of the butter to help make it be a thing.
They are going to have a revelation when they butter their fucking bread for those.
It's unbelievable. And then they were suggesting that, do you slice the butter? And I was like, what do you mean slice? And like, well, butter's hard. And I was like, that's what you have a butter dish for. The mind was blown. A butter dish. Unknown. What is a butter dish?
Oh my God, thing. You really got
and
into
I was
it.
Like, I was like linking things like Amazon being like, and then I showed them, the thing that's like the butter churn, which like sits upside down in water. Incredible. People were like hearting it and being like, this is amazing. Da, 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 da.
Oh, wow.
It is as close as I've ever gone to going viral. It was.
You became the story
I had
there
like,
as well.
Maybe like 100 hearts attached to one of the things. Wow. I was like, God, I'm like seen.
But you see, what you've stumbled upon here is how seriously two Irish people take butter.
Europeans, I would say. Europeans.
Yeah. Oh, God, I mean, the French are so
French,
into their butter.
English people, to be fair, very strong on toast and butter and the use of it. I think everyone's united disbelief was around, how are you sandwiching?
Uh-huh.
How is sandwiching happening as a concept? And then, okay, because this then interplayed then with, there was a lot, I'm getting really into this now, there was a big swathe there for a little while on food talk of Italian deli people making Italian deli sandwiches with fresh ingredients and no condiment to bind the ingredients to the bread.
Yeah.
And they were just making them.
Oh.
And their argument was that, like, so they would use, like, mortadella and then the mozzarella that, like, bursts.
Yeah.
The burrata mozzarella. And that burrata mozzarella would be the binding, but they wouldn't put any...
No.
But that was like, that's like traditional fancy deli
well,
sandwiches.
The other thing is that, so mayo, butter is such a brilliant multi-purpose thing to put on bread, right? I hate to circle back to this, but right. So it's not
the
just...
The intensity, folks, that we are in this right now.
It's not just... It
this
sticks,
might be the first time that something is genuinely just wrong with that one. Like, genuinely.
It protects the bread from wet ingredients, but it also, it's not wet in itself. This is the genius about butter. Mayo is wet. So
mayo is inherently
you're
wet.
You're saying, oh, mayo substitutes butter. if I was without butter, mm-hmm. I would use mayo because otherwise my sandwich would be dry and I wouldn't bother having a sandwich at all. But it's not the same because you're just basically moistening the bread with some mayo and you're adding a bit of flavour there.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing.
And also, you can have butter on its own as a topping.
Yes, of course, yeah.
You cannot have a mayo toast.
No, you're not going to get a bit of a baguette and then put some mayo on it. And you could do that, but you have to have cheese as well.
Yeah, which is so interesting to me then because Australians then start to weigh in and they were like, well, yes, what is butter toast if not fairy bread waiting to happen?
Mm-hmm.
And the Americans are obsessed with that. It's a whole other, like... Anyway, that's all to say... It was a cultural reset. No one knew what they were doing going into that conversation. I came out changed, and now I think about bread very differently.
Well,
I had two slices today, and I thought loved every bit of it with butter.
I think that hopefully, I'm hoping that what you've done has created a shift across the world, right?
Yes.
And
beginning in America.
You know what? A lot of the problems that they're having over there, mm-hmm. maybe if they started buttering their bread, it could have a knock-on effect.
Who knows the ramifications, these things? Mm. You know, a pebble in a pond casts ripples. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, we got rid of all our guns in this country through butter alone. No.
Edit.
I was going for something, okay? I didn't know what I was going for.
Guns
but
in
it
Northern
was
Ireland is not all like to be said.
I will cut it up for you.
It's like, what's happening?
I know,
happening?
Sorry. I just was trying something. It's okay.
The X-rated podcast.
So, I mean, this has been a completely shocking episode for me.
Really,
it took a turn at the end.
It did. It really engaged us there at the end. So, shall I summarise?
Yes, please.
I'm just centering myself here before we begin this. So, to begin, we talked about the menagerie of fabrication that we can come out with, times that things are said on a whim, that is different to pathological lying, and we're not touching on that yet because it's not a psychological podcast, and how there's a need for empathy, there's a need for understanding, and there's no real harm done because you're just doing it to have a bit of crack, even though it can feel a bit weird sometimes, but we're not going to delve into it deeply because that could be something around social anxiety, and we might talk about that in another podcast. We then delved into the fish genocide felt in Hollywood. A dark time for those being passed. Who do we call? Who do we speak to? Maybe Dira, maybe not. We don't know.
Yeah.
The fish are not okay.
No.
But
it's a natural occurrence,
it's
people.
It's a natural occurrence. It was not the bloom of 23. And there are cats missing, some with curly haired ears, some who aren't. We hope they're all right. Big shout out to Captain also. Finally. We broke the armistice on bread. Butter, bread, mayonnaise. Does it all go together? Does it not? I would argue as well, there are some sandwiches where you have butter and mayonnaise on them, depending
on
what you're having.
Yeah. All the time I have
what
butter
then?
And mayonnaise.
What then? What are we doing then? People are broken. So, Americans and those who do not put butter in your sandwiches, your life will be better because of it.
Yeah.
Not sliced butter. It's not a condiment. You leave it out and let it come to room temp, or you delve into the world of margarine and have something there. I would recommend Lurpak. It's wonderful.
Everybody loves Lurpak, and I have Flora Buttery and it's very nice. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
So to come to a final close, Emma.
Mm.
Emma.
Yes.
This is hard for me to say.
Right.
Only because I really want you to hear it.
Okay.
And it needs to resonate with you in a way that I feel will change the waters of your being, you know?
Okay.
Really bring you to a surface level place that you hadn't been to before.
Yeah.
There is nothing wrong with you.
Wow. Okay. I received that and I feel like there's going to be a shift change or something.
Yes.
In my whole being, thanks to that revelation about there being nothing wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
And equally, I would also like to share with you, many things, among which is that we really have to finish it now. There's also nothing wrong with you, Danny.
The cleaver has come down.
Right. We're done with that.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong.
So, until next time.
There's nothing wrong with you, Danny. Is that what I'm saying?
Yes,
no. Nope.
And there's nothing wrong with you, Emma. Good night.
Do that again. Sorry, I got shocked. Okay. Do it again. Till next time.
No, leave it in.
Oh,
it's
God.
Great. It's great. Bye, 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 bye.
Is it me?
It's always you.
Okay, sorry. Right, I forget every time.
And this is my.
Okay, so I say, and this is our podcast. Mm-hmm. I say that, but.